It's showtime.
Hey, welcome to Did You Watch Survivor Last Night? My name is Jake Shadell. This is a podcast about reality television and friendship in which I ask my best friend, Thomas Powell, if he did indeed watch a certain reality show. Hey, Thomas, how you doing today of all days?
What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
You'll see.
Oh my god, it's January 27th. What is that supposed to mean?
It's January 27th. Only 10 months and 29 days until Christmas. It's Christmas Eve to the
Woo!
300th power.
Christmas in January. It's our annual Christmas in January sale.
Welcome to January Christmas.
If you're in the mid to late 20s of any month, let me tell you, buddy, it's Christmas.
It's Christmas. Christmas time comes once a month. Christmas time is here.
On the 12th month of Christmas, my true love came to me.
What are we talking about?
I
think I said, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Okay, cool.
Glad we established that.
Good.
I don't know. I feel like it's cold out.
Oh.
You hear about this?
How cold is it?
Oh, do you want me to break out that old classic? That old standard of mine?
Yeah, give it to me.
Jake, you were talking about, will certainly be cut from the final edit of this, you were talking about a bit that you had done, and I'm sure are too embarrassed to include in the final edit.
Yeah, because I forgot all of the setup, and then it was like, here's a punchline.
I'm brave, okay?
Oh, you're like
happy to share the comedy that I've done.
You're the Irish girl from Brave.
So, yeah, please, okay, so, Jake, it's real cold out right now.
How cold is it?
It's so cold, the freezer thinks it's hot.
It's a good bit from when we were, like, 14 years
just
old.
That was a little bit of me channeling, before I even knew who he was, Justin McElroy under duress, where, like, my brain shuts off. A few words come out.
Here's an honest question, Thomas. Did you say that? This whole time, I thought I was the one who said that.
No, I did. And you made fun of me for it. I like that you have such low self-esteem that you were like, wow, that was a bad bit. Surely I did that.
That was a stupid thing to say.
I'm fucking stupid.
That must have been me. I know myself well enough.
No, you did. I know you did it because I think I offhand mentioned something being cold, and you were like, how cold is it? Which is a good bit. It's always a good bit to do.
It's always a good bit.
And yeah, then I couldn't come up with anything, and my brain shut off, and that's what came out.
Okay, yeah, because I do remember, like, kind of following your logic, and I'm like, wait, no, that... I don't think
doesn't hold up. And I was like,
you keep using that
tough
aphorism,
crowd.
I don't think you know what that aphorism means.
Tough crowd with Colin Quinn.
I love that show.
That's what it was like out there.
Guy.
But it was more like tough crowd without Colin Quinn. Colin Quinn wasn't there. He was too busy preparing for his role 10 years or more later in the Amy Schumer movie. Trainwreck.
Trainwreck.
He dies in that movie.
I have...
Also, Colin Quinn plays Amy Schumer's dad in that, which I guess that's not totally age inappropriate, but I feel like Colin Quinn is in, like, his 50s.
How old is Amy Schumer? She's in, like, her 30s.
She's in her 30s, I think.
Colin Quinn's gotta be in his 60s by now.
Yeah, maybe he is. I don't know. He's 59.
Thomas, can you watch... Hey, Thomas,
you were almost right, but I was actually right, because he's 59.
Oh, my God.
Amy Schumer
is...
Thanks
for tuning in, Scott Pollard.
Amy Schumer is 37 years old, okay? So am I to believe that Colin Quinn had a child when he was 21 or 22?
Yeah.
That seems like a little bit of a stretch, okay?
I have not seen
I don't
that
think Colin
movie.
Quinn has ever had sex, okay?
Thomas, I have
I'm
a question.
I'm putting that out there.
Thomas, oh my God.
Just a little hard to believe. Oh, and I'm supposed to believe that LeBron James is Bill Hader's friend because, come on.
Thomas, I've never seen Trainwreck. Can you watch it on Netflix?
You might be able to. It was okay. I don't particularly like Amy Schumer.
You know what else you can watch on Netflix? Bill Hader was documentary.
Bill Hader was very good in it. And LeBron James had a surprisingly funny cameo.
Hey, Thomas, did you watch Fire, the greatest party that never happened last
but
night?
Let me tell you, I did watch Trainwreck several years ago in the theater, and I've got some more thoughts about it that I'd really like to run down.
Somebody call 911, shoddy fire burning on the dance floor.
You haven't answered my question.
Yes, I watched Fire. Fine, okay, I don't get to talk about Trainwreck. I don't get to talk about Brie Larson's performance in the movie. That's fine.
I didn't even know she was in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that you could learn from me about this movie, and you're choosing not to. So you know what? Boy. Fuck you.
You know what? We haven't even gotten through the Fire episode yet, but next week, do you want to watch Trainwreck?
I can talk about a movie that I kind of liked. That had funny John Cena and LeBron James.
Oh, I love John Cena.
John Cena's really funny in it.
John Cena's really funny in everything. Have you seen his hair recently?
That's yeah, it's funny. Pretty bad. I don't know why he's doing that.
He's running for senator. That's why.
Ah, okay. He's got my vote.
Me too.
Not really, but... Sorry, John.
Okay. Let's talk about this fucking documentary. It was incredible.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I gotta stop stalling. This is a fucking this was great. I kind of want to watch the Hulu one now, because I've heard that one's actually even better.
Oh, really? I heard the Netflix one was better. I heard what the Hulu one had was an exclusive interview with Billy McFarland, but from the one review of each one I read, the Netflix one is has a better narrative.
I get that. I'm a little bit... I enjoyed it. I was trying to take some of the stuff from the people involved with a grain of salt, because the Fuck Jerry did actually produce Fire.
Yeah.
I find that a little suspicious. Like, not that the portrayal of Billy McFarland is wrong in any way, because, like, honestly, there's no way to spin that. That dude's a fucking sociopath.
Yeah.
But, like, I think they sort of barely put their own, you know, participation. They sort of tried to obscure that a little bit, so.
Yeah. Were they like a PR firm?
Is that They're like they a do? Media company. They're media? Like a production company, I think.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember thinking at one point, like, I know this is a terrible situation, but, like, if you get a really good PR firm, they're going to be able to spin it in a way. How did you not think about that?
It's like, I'm going to look up Fuck Jerry right now. I think they appear, like, very briefly.
Yeah, they are brought up in the beginning, just saying that they had been, like, contacted, and they seemed very excited.
Oh, Fuck Jerry apparently started as an Instagram account.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, so that makes sense that they would be involved with, like, something with influencers or whatever.
Yeah.
The real antagonists of this film.
No, I'm pretty sure there was a pretty clear antagonist in this movie. I know you were making a joke, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I think Billy McFarland, pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think the influencers were the most loathsome people in this movie.
When one of them had got on a regular plane and said, "This is worse than low, low economy," did you not appreciate that quote?
Honestly, like, that stuff was all bad, but I think the most I cringed at anything in the movie was the compilation they had of all of the people talking into their phones. Like, all the Instagram people being like, "About to go to the Fire Festival," like, that shit. I was like, who fucking follows these people?
I don't know.
I don't understand why you'd want to have just, like, some kind of blandly attractive person just be like, "This is what I'm doing right now. It's very exclusive."
Yeah, I don't understand the appeal either. I think my own friends' lives are boring, so why would I watch somebody on the internet?
Yeah, like, if it was someone I knew doing that, I'd be like, cool, whatever. But, like, it's... I'm supposed to be won over by a stranger this way?
I don't know. They've, like, figured it out. And I wasn't bothered by that so much because I know that's just like they pulled all of the footage they could from everywhere that they could. That was just like what they got from the plane or whatever, or like the trip down there, because obviously they weren't, the Firefest people weren't documenting people getting on the airport in Miami.
No.
So
no, I think it was really good color for like the film. I just think it was like, especially, and the interviews with every single person that was like an influencer that taken over there, I was like, God, these are the worst fucking people on earth. Like, I'm glad this happened to them. I felt awful for, we should probably go through like sort of the actual narrative of this, like the progression of it, but like,
yeah,
I did end up feeling bad that my, because I remember my initial thought and a few other people was like, oh, this is hilarious that this is happening to these people, fuck them. And like, on a certain level, yes, but there were actual victims of this, and it really was like a very depressing thing.
It would suck for anyone, but sure, there's a little schadenfreude, and that's what makes it fun until you...
Oh, I 100% don't care about anything from them. Those are not the people that I care about.
You didn't like the dude.
I didn't feel bad for them at all.
Here's the thing I was wondering about the interviews, like the straight-to-camera interviews with the influencers or guests, like, after the fact. Where were they shot? Because it looked like they were just in their homes, but they're all, like, our age and younger. It's like, how are you affording a place like that?
Because they probably do stuff for brands. I feel like that's how influencers make money.
Well, clearly, like
they basically just like advertise stuff.
At one point, they said, Kendall Jenner got $250,000 just for posting about the festival one time.
Yeah,
that's insane. Okay, yeah, let's start from the beginning of the documentary. It's fantastic. At a web summit, Billy McFarland tells a hilarious story of trying to book Ja Rule via Instagram for a party, but it was very difficult. So they started a new app to help book artists called Fire. That story was so funny. He talked to two different people on Instagram, and they asked for a lot of money, and then he bragged about giving them the money.
Yeah, it's like, you gotta pay the guy to get to Ja Rule or whatever. For, like, the kind of, like, Silicon Valley dipshit, like, pitches and stuff, this one's probably one of the better ones. It just, like, it's still, like, the bar is so fucking low for that, that it's like, yeah, cool. It makes Ja Rule sound interesting. It doesn't make you sound interesting.
Makes you sound dumb. Which we find out he is. I do think, like, they explain this app. Seems like a pretty good idea for an app, honestly.
It's on a certain level, yeah. I think that level of centralization could be bad. It's basically putting a middleman in between like the actual booking process. I just don't feel like it would, you know, I mean, if you did it sincerely, it might be useful for some people, but like at the same time, spoiler, that the app was a fucking giant lie.
Yeah.
Like, later in it, they're like, they were saying that you could book Drake on this app. Like, you can't fucking book Drake. Come on, Drake's not gonna let you book him on an app.
Yeah, but what if he did? That'd be cool.
I wonder what kind of take, like, what kind of cut of your, of, like, booking fees and stuff they take for that. Because I feel like it's a really good way to rip people off.
I think they clearly took 100% of the money they gave.
Especially if it's Billy McFarlane running it. Like, considering they give you some details about the thing he did before this, and then later reveal that that was a big fucking scam, that, like, this dude's just a scam artist.
But he'll spend so much time in prison, and it'll never happen again. Okay, so Ja Rule and Billy McFarland are friends now, and they're flying over an island in the Bahamas and decide to land there because it looked cool. I remember when the story first came out, the story was that they had run out of gas and needed to make an emergency landing. But they didn't mention that in the movie. So I don't know what to believe.
I mean, look, there's a lot of threads out there.
True. It's like a sweater. I accidentally scrolled too far down. on my notes. Okay. Billy McFarlane and Ja Rule refer to themselves as Magic Bird, which I think is a good nickname. Like Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the idea that they, like...
They changed basketball.
They came in and changed basketball or whatever.
Because of their rivalry. I think
which one do you think is Magic and which one do you think is Bird? Because it might not be who you think.
I don't really know much about Magic Johnson and Larry Bird outside of basketball.
I would say like Billy McFarland, Magic Johnson, Ja Rule, Larry Bird.
Why?
Because it subverts your expectations.
What? There's no
also,
logic behind it.
Larry Bird,
that.
It's funny that people have this idea of Larry Bird as like this very boring, stoic man. Because he's like a white guy that looks like he has a stick up his ass.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you know, he played the game the right way. Like, people think he just threw bounce passes or whatever, whereas Larry Bird was an incredibly flashy player who threw a bunch of incredibly flashy passes and also was maybe the most notorious shit talker in the history of basketball. So, like,
yeah,
he was like a fucking killer. He was not like a, you know, hand the ball to the ref kind of guy or whatever. Like he was like a, he liked to fuck with people. And I feel like Ja Rule also likes to do that.
He's the Ja Rule of basketball, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah. They decide, that this island would be a good place to hold a music festival. And then they film a commercial for a festival that does not exist yet with a bunch of Instagram models. And they document everything. This movie, like, all they had to do was shoot the interviews and edit it. Like, they didn't have to go out and shoot anything because fucking Billy McFarlane shot everything.
They filmed everything. Like, I don't understand why they did this.
I'm sure it's Billy McFarlane's own narcissism and is like, this is going to make a great documentary, which he was right about, but I don't think it told the story he wanted it to.
It's just bizarre. Like, I don't, like, how much are these people lying to themselves while they're, like, defrauding people? Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. Like, how dumb are you that you're doing this and you're gonna put it on tape?
I don't know. And then, we'll get
I also like that they're, like, we're on our private island, which is just, like, not an island. It's just a part of another, like...
Oh, yeah. You mean you think it's funny that they lied? They continued to lie?
Yeah, well, they kept framing it as that, and it was like, no, it's just like a part of the Bahamas. It's not a private island.
Initially, they were on their own island, but then they had to move. Because this was one of my favorite parts of the movie. It doesn't come until later, but whatever. They were apparently told when they bought this private island to not use Pablo Escobar's name because he had owned this island.
That's what it was. And
they were explicitly told
not to do it. And then at every opportunity, they were like, it's going to be on Pablo Escobar's island.
Yeah.
And they were like, all right, well, fuck you. We're kicking you off.
And then they had to jump like two or three times to a different island. And that's when they ended up on like the big public island. Gosh. It's ridiculous.
Every single thing about this is ridiculous. Can we talk about the guy that flies them?
I was just
going to
bring
places?
Him up.
Because he's my favorite character in the movie.
Yes,
and
me too.
I also like that they introduce him by being like, he's just like this German guy, and they were like, oh, he taught himself how to fly using Flight Simulator.
He
and
got
like
his
talking
pilot's
about it.
License 6 months earlier using Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Yeah, and he's flying them around to like simulate zero gravity and stuff, but he's like, "Oh, it's a very good program and you know, you can actually teach yourself how to fly." And I was like, "Oh my god, this dude, like what a fucking fraud." And then by about 15 minutes later, I was like, "This is the only dude with any perspective on anything that's going on." The Microsoft Flight Simulator guy was the most reasonable person in the entire movie.
I really came around on Keith.
He was great. That dude ruled. And you know what? He probably is a good pilot. Maybe he's just a savant.
Yeah.
Maybe I should teach myself to fly using Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Hey, you can really learn how to fly on it.
You can.
And that was the first detail where I was like, "What the fuck?" Like,
yeah.
That's like the first red flag, And it is the most minor red flag.
Absolutely. It ends up having, the idea, it's like, these are the people they surround themselves with, and then they let him go because he was like, you guys can't do this. Like, this is going to be a disaster. And they were like, well, bye.
Bye.
Even that guy, the guy that's like, it's totally cool, I got my pilot's license with Microsoft Flight Simulator, it's fine, was like, these people are fucking crazy.
I can't wait until we get to that scene. Okay. So I started watching this a couple nights ago, and I only got through like the first half hour, and it's like so stressful. Because it's, you know, it just builds on itself. And then I watched it again with a friend all the way through last night, and it builds and builds and builds. You know, it's super stressful, even though you're super not rooting for the subject of the film.
Not at all, but like, I just don't want like... I don't want it to... They introduce so many people in it that are generally not super guilty. Like, people that are, like, coming into it to engage in good faith and not, like... And are, like, trying to avert disaster by, like, that have perspective on what's actually going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel bad for them because it's, like, they're just trying as hard as they can to not get people killed doing this.
Yeah.
And they just, like, they're struggling against Billy McFarland and the other people that... sort of have bought into his idea of what this is going to be.
Yeah, it's crazy. But then I was doing my notes, like going through the movie again, and I felt like the same level, like the same stress level coming up as I was like going through it again. It's just like there's so many things to cause so much anxiety, and they make the wrong choice on every single time.
It's all bad.
So then a bunch of influencers simultaneously post a single orange tile to promote Fyre Festival. It looked like the Channel Orange cover.
It did a little bit. They got all, like, a bunch of really famous... Like, they got Kendall Jenner, they got, like, Gigi Hadid, and, like, a bunch of other, you know, like, famous sort of... models.
Gigi Hadid? I thought it was Bella
Hadid. Was it Bella Hadid?
I don't know.
It's one of the Hadids. I think it was Bella. Bella's the older one, I think, of the two.
Honestly, I didn't even know there were two of them.
Well, I mean, look. The only reason that I know about them at all is
because you follow them both on Instagram.
No, there's a podcast I was listening to that was going through... You know those, have you ever seen those like 73 question interviews or whatever with celebrities?
Oh, yeah, they're awful.
They're fucking insane.
Yeah, they're really bad.
Someone did one with Bella Hadid. By someone, I mean the guy that does all of those did one. And it's like the most banal shit I've ever listened to.
Oh my God. Wait, they did that as a podcast?
No, someone on a podcast was talking about
this. Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I was going to say, like, having it only be audio makes it even worse. In the mayoral race here in, or the governor race, sorry, here in Chicago last year.
The governor race in Chicago, the state of Chicago. Yeah, where you had the two billionaires running against each other and the ice cream man lost.
J.B. Pritzker, who did end up winning, which... is the smallest victory of all time.
Yeah, it's like you go from like a right-wing shithead to like a center right shithead, basically.
He
also seems J.B. Pritzker. Like, the fuck
so
is that?
Bad. It's so bad. It's like a doll's name. One of his campaign commercials... was one of those 73 question style of him like pulling up to a gas station and paying for gas, and it was the same style and everything. It was like, I hate the fact that I'm going to vote for this man.
Yeah, they really just wanted to sort of whip up the enthusiasm for him. I like that he's the guy. It's Bruce Rauner is the guy that lost,
yes,
right?
Yes, Bruce
Rauner. I like that J.B. Pritzker sounds like he should be the ice cream impresario.
J.B. Pritzker sucks. I can't wait for him to get...
Isn't it great when the people that... The better options you have to vote for in Illinois politics are J.B. Pritzker and, like, Rahm Emanuel? before you decided to yeah. to go away.
Yeah.
Like, those are the people that you're supposed to vote for.
The guy who lost to Rahm by a very close margin, who Chicago actually loves, is a congressperson now, so that's good. And there's a lot of...
That's good.
There's a lot of good options for the next mayor. Anyway, that's...
That's also good. Well, they're gonna... Jake, I got bad news for you. They're gonna elect a Daley again.
Yep, probably. The person I am rooting for and went to an event for is currently polling at 4%.
Oh, good. So yeah, machine politics suck. That's why New York politics also suck.
Yep. It's... You know? It's discouraging...
Yeah. Not so well-oiled machine, though, the Fire Festival.
Ooh, nice transition. Okay, so Keith, the pilot, is now apparently also the logistics coordinator. And
he knows how to get around. He can fly places. He can get there faster than anyone.
He can fly places in zero-G. He's the logistics coordinator. He plans to house everyone on a cruise ship off the coast because he realized they will not have room for everyone on the island. How is that not the first thing you check?
I mean, yeah, that the fact that he at least recognized that means he's more competent than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, it's crazy that we won't have enough room on this island for everyone. In the villas that we promised all of them.
It's like going into a class presentation, doing zero research beforehand. It's been like, here's what I'm going to do, and then you talk about it and you just bullshit for 30 minutes or whatever. That's what Billy McFarland did on a grander scale. Billy was certain it wouldn't be an issue, and they decided to scrap the cruise idea and instead just put everyone in tents, and then also he fired Keith. Which, like...
Yeah, because Keith was like, you can't do this. Like, you're not going to be able to deliver on what you promised. And he was like, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Bye.
So, you fired your pilot on an island.
Yeah, it's just normal. You know what? He wasn't a team player, okay? They can't have negative people around.
Yeah. And he's
can't have all this negativity around. You know, it's stepping on his vision.
Here's one thing I like about Billy McFarland more than Jeff Probst. There were a lot of jet skis in this one.
I mean, look, riding. Yeah. He knows that at the very least.
Yeah. So that's
have
good.
Billy McFarland on work release host Survivor.
I would not watch the show anymore.
That's no, I wouldn't either.
So they brought some producer people in and figured out a budget of $38 million. And then the booking person for the festival... cited an additional $3 to $4 million for the talent. How do you have that much money?
You know, it's a good question.
Yeah, so we talked about how they had to move islands already. Like Lost. So they finally end up on Great Exuma, which made the locals very happy because... They expected it to help their economy, create jobs and all that, because they had a 5-year contract. I felt the most bad for that woman who owned the restaurant.
I felt very bad for her. I did not feel the most bad for her because she was already a business owner. Like, it was bad for her. I felt worse for the construction workers.
Oh, yeah.
Who literally don't end up getting paid.
Yeah, that's true. I meant of the people.
Of the people, the people that got interviewed, yeah. Like, they fucking ruined her.
Basically anybody they interviewed who lived on the Bahamas, I was like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it feel just terrible for them.
Also, the weekend they picked is already Great Exuma's busiest weekend because there is a big regatta that takes place then. So that's very smart. What I don't understand is, why not just move the date? Like, push it back 6 months or something. It's the Bahamas. It's still going to be nice. I don't
know. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's probably hard to do that. I feel like logistically, especially when you don't have a logistics coordinator anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to do that. And you know, you've booked all these bands for the specific date. I'm sure it's going to be hard to book the same bands that you know, bands like Blink-182 or the other people they had there probably book a year out in advance for a lot of their stuff. So,
sure. But also, if you see things going wrong, and you have like, it's not worth the gamble, I think. Like,
I feel like with this, like, 6 months was not going to fix anything.
I mean, maybe
the
not
only
six
the
months,
only thing to do here
months.
Was to cancel the festival and refund people their money. But
well, yeah, but guess what? He really wants to put on this festival. I don't know. I think you could have pushed it back 6, 8, 12 months, however long you need to like get it all set. But you know what? They fired the pilot, the only person who knew what he was talking about. Another thing. The influencers who were coming had been promised free beachfront property, which did not exist.
Yep. Yeah, they were promised they were all going to be in villas. On this part of the island that didn't have them, and the whole thing is crazy.
So eventually, another person somewhat involved in the festival comes down to the island to take a look at the site and realizes that they're just using leftover hurricane tents to house people.
Yeah, this is the point where that guy starts doing the, like, Fire Festival Truth account on Twitter that gets zero traction, despite the fact that he has, like, a ton of dirt on them.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, Billy has everyone on Great Exuma working who can, quote, lift a towel.
It's a lot of people. A lot of people can lift a towel.
A lot of people can lift a towel. That's a great metric. I'm going to start using that. At the company Fire back in New York, people are getting paid late and sometimes in just bags of cash.
Yeah, that was an interesting part. The people that were just there to work on the app.
Yeah.
Talking about their experience, that was interesting because it's like, because that's the thing with this. This was an app and they were using the festival to promote it.
Yeah.
And like, this is supposed to be a side thing. Like, the app is supposed to be the thing.
Right.
And these people are like, what the fuck is happening here?
Those are some other people that I definitely felt bad for. It's like, I just wanted to make a
cool app.
Yeah,
they weren't involved in this at all. They were just trying to make the app.
Then people started getting emails. Guests of the festival started getting emails to tell them to load money onto wristbands, like a wallet for the weekend. But they never tested out these bracelets.
This also just seemed like a way for them to steal money from people.
I mean, I think it was very clearly, obviously, like, I think even the people who got these emails, a lot of them were like, yeah, duh, I'm not going to do this. The people they interviewed, at least. But some people...
Apparently some people did, and some people were putting a lot of money on some of them.
I think they said $800,000.
But yeah, how would you even spend all of that
over
the length of a festival?
In my entire life, I've even made... total $800,000.
I know I haven't. Yeah.
That's...
How could you spend that much in a fucking weekend? Like, there's no... Yeah. What could you possibly be spending it on?
I don't know. I, like, go to street festivals in the summer, and it's like, a chicken sandwich is, like, $13, when it would usually be, like, $8 at the restaurant or something.
The idea is you're spending
expensive.
It at the festival, too. Like, within the festival. That's why it's on the wristband.
Right. So, like, what kind of food trucks are they going to have at this island?
Well, none is the answer, but, like, what did you think was going to be there?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of, like, festivals I've been to.
Yeah, like, I went to Riot Fest
in
2017, and, like, at the actual festival probably spent, I don't know, I mean... I got food there a couple times. I probably spent like $30 over the 2 days that I was there.
I went to Riot Fest 2016 or 15. The one that Morrissey headlined. I left before Morrissey did his set. I think I just like got some food and like got a few beers and went on the Ferris wheel.
And I don't think I could have spent more than like $40 or $50.
Yeah, like I feel like I just got some barbecue and maybe like a burger one time and then like a beer or two. It was too hot to be getting a lot of beers there. I was mostly drinking water.
That's smart.
But yeah, like it was.
I was getting Bud Lights,
just,
which basically is water. So
yeah, pretty much. So yeah, I didn't end up spending that much money. Yeah, maybe,
you didn't spend
maybe
a wristband of $800,000.
Somewhere between $30 and $40, probably. Yeah, I can't even. That's the thing is, like, at a festival like that, like I understand.
That's 100,000 Bud Lights at a music festival.
Yeah, I understand that Fire is a little more upscale and it's in an exotic location, but like. It boggles my mind to think where you would even spend that money.
I don't know, because they didn't.
Like, you're just going to buy all the merch they have available?
That's a lot of t-shirts. That's like 1,000 t-shirts. Yeah, I don't remember them ever detailing anything that you could buy at the festival, like food or drink. It was all, like, all-inclusive. And if you already buy your tickets, like, what are you going to spend this money on?
Yeah, that really, obviously that stuck with both of us.
Yeah. Also they didn't have enough tents for the attendees. Also, they stopped attaching the partners, the people they were getting the money from, to their emails about things not going well on the island. And then the catering deal they had fell through. And then they also stopped posting pictures of the living arrangements online, and people started asking questions. And then they started deleting the negative questions and comments on Instagram.
Yep.
And then, even though it was obvious that this was going to fail, Billy was indignant on continuing. Billy apparently had to put on the festival because he was going to have to pay everyone whether or not he canceled it.
Yeah, like, he had basically gone to, like, loan sharks to finance it.
It's insane.
Yeah, it really was. I know they were like super demanding about, oh, with the catering, they were trying to do like, they were like, we're gonna have like sushi and this, and they, it was like they did not have the budget for it at all.
Oh yeah, there were like they listed like 4 or 5 different types of like styles of food that were not like at all similar, and it was just like, yeah, we can't do that. And also, you know, they need a lot of water to drink. So they had a 18-wheeler full of, was it Evian water?
I believe it was Evian.
Of course. The customs agent wanted them to pay $175,000 to transport it to the island.
Yeah, there was some sort of, like, yeah, customs thing where, like, it was, like, partially, like, actual fees and partially, like, corruption that you had to go through with certain people. And this is where the thing that people have been talking about this documentary a lot happened.
Yeah, as if
happened.
That wasn't enough, Billy McFarland goes to, I thought of him as a father figure in the movie, like an event producer that he, like, works with a lot, who's a bit older. And asks him.
It seemed like a very nice guy. I was a little skeptical of him because he was like, Billy McFarland is like, we were also impressed by him. It's like from his initial, or, you know, his initial thing that he did. And I was like, this dude could very easily also be kind of a scammer, just like a more legit one.
Yeah.
But regardless, I felt very bad for him here.
Yeah. Billy McFarland told him that he would like him to go suck the custom agent's dick to avoid the fee. And he...
Yeah, this was it. Yeah, it was presented to him like this was something that they needed, like, he had to do it. Like, this is... It was presented as, like, this is what the customs agent is asking, or, like, the customs... It was, like, the head of customs or whatever for the Bahamas. It's like, this is what he is demanding instead of the money in order for us to do this.
Yeah, that was never...
So he was given the impression that this was like, I have to do this, otherwise we're not going to have water and people are going to die.
Yeah, but that was never discussed before he brought it up to, I think his name was Andy?
Yeah. I'm saying, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, this is, he gave Andy the impression that this was like, he had to do it.
Yeah. Billy was just like, I know how to get it out of this one. I'm not going to do
it.
This
is really fucked up.
So he was willing to do it,
He said he went there fully prepared to do it.
And the agent was like, yeah, you don't have to do that, but just give me the money first before you give it to anyone else. So they avoided that issue. The night before the festival was set to start, they had a terrible rainstorm over the site. Well,
yeah, that was the point. They said the guy that was doing like the yoga or whatever, who I thought was one of the more sympathetic people,
the guy who looked like Jonathan Van Ness.
Yeah, the entire time he was emailing them, being like, "We can't do this. Like, this is, people are literally going to die if we do this."
Yep.
And it was, you know, getting met with hostility. Wasn't there somebody else who was running like PR or something for them that was like, "I can't, like, we can't tell people this," and they were like, "All right, well," it was like their social media coordinator, and they were like, "Give us all the passwords for this.
Yeah,
you're fired."
Yeah, I don't remember exactly who that was, but I do.
But
that.
Yeah, the other guy was like, "This is the point where we realized we were like, there was a half second where we were like, maybe we're going to be able to pull this off," and then the rainstorm hit, and it was like, "All right, well,"
yeah.
Yeah, this is officially the, like, we've blown our last chance. Like, this is, we're fucked.
So back in the States, the influencers and guests are getting on their planes. And I mentioned this earlier, they weren't the planes that they were expecting to get on. Someone said it's worse than low, low economy.
Yeah, they were promised like private planes, and what they got was like commercial planes that had like a fire logo.
Yeah. Bless you. So once they land in Great Exuma, they are sent to a bar on the island rather than the site of the festival. They gave the owner 25 minutes notice.
Yeah, and funneled everyone over there because they were like, this is the one place that we can send them that doesn't look like a complete fucking disaster.
Yeah. They were there for 6 hours and then headed over to the festival. They stood in line for unknown reasons. And then the festival people blare music to distract them from the fact that they're standing in line for no reason.
This is so bad. The DJ there was like, yeah, I kept, like, people kept coming up to me and being like, can you please turn this down? Like, you're torturing people with this. Like, people can't hear themselves. Like, we can't, event staff can't talk to them. Like, it's too loud. And he would turn it down. And then Billy McFarland would come back and be like, play that music louder.
I wonder what his brain is like.
God. Also, this is the point when people start going out to the tents. This is the point where
here's why people start going out to the tents. Billy McFarland gets up on a table and says, if you got a villa, go grab a tent.
Yep.
And so everyone just started running over to the tents.
And this is the part where any sympathy that I had for the influencers, and it wasn't much, completely evaporated because...
Yeah.
These people, instead of being like, all right, we got to get through this together, we're all in it, we're like, all right, how can I make it so I'm the only one that is comfortable? And like, that dude was literally like, we were like trashing tents around ours so that people wouldn't be close to us.
Like,
I was like,
tearing
these
other tents,
fucking
like
psychopaths.
Under my mattresses. Yeah. Like, we didn't want neighbors.
Yeah. Like, what? That's what you care about here?
I don't know.
Like, if things had gone slightly worse, people actually would have died there, and it would have been because these people would have been, like, dumping out bottles of water. Like,
oh, yeah.
I want to be the only one that has water.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait till they dramatize this and release it as a movie.
That was honestly, like, aside from Billy McFarland, like, those really were, like, the people that I found most loathsome in this movie was that one guy, that Asian guy that was saying, like, we didn't want neighbors or whatever. I was like, this dude should be in fucking jail.
Yeah, somebody said that once the sun went down, the camaraderie was lost. And there was a looting mentality. We also didn't mention 2 18-wheelers pulled up with their luggage and then just threw it on the ground without any sort of organization. So we were just, like, grabbing at their luggage, trying to find it. Insane.
Yeah, there were also, like, no lights.
Oh, yeah,
around.
There were no lights at all.
Yeah.
How do you forget that?
That's fucked up.
And then came the cheese sandwich post.
Yep. This was the thing that really... on social media that really sunk them.
Yeah, I remember seeing that when this all happened. And just being like, what is this? Because I had not heard of Fyre Festival before that post.
Let me tell you, I appreciated the cheese sandwich is one of the things. Like, that is one of the things that you absolutely have to highlight, because that was when people that weren't, you know, didn't even know what the festival was started seeing stuff from it being like, what is this?
Yeah.
But they did not include, and they should have had literally at least like a 5-minute segment just on this. They did not include the statement that Ja Rule gave as everything was going to shit, which is the seminal thing about the entire debacle. It is the thing that people most remember. It is certainly the thing that I most remember. And I'm going to read it right now, yes, because please. They literally did not show it. And it is insane to me that they didn't show it.
Okay.
So this is, I get that they were trying to highlight Billy McFarland more than Ja, but like, Ja also came off like a fucking creep in this movie. Yeah. Anytime that they showed him talking about the festival, this is the statement that Ja Rule gave on Twitter as people were really starting to like make fun of the whole situation because it was clearly going to shit. "We are working right now on getting everyone off the island safe," all caps. "That is my immediate concern. I will make a statement soon. I'm heartbroken at this moment. My partners and I wanted this to be an amazing event. It was," all caps, "not a scam," as everyone is reporting. "I don't know how everything went so left, but I'm working to make it right by making sure everyone is refunded. I truly apologize, as this is not my fault," in all caps. That is the line, like, this whole thing. Anytime I think about Fyre Festival, all I think of is the line, "I truly apologize, as this is not my fault. But I'm taking responsibility." Like, no, you're not. "I'm deeply sorry to everyone who is inconvenienced by this."
Inconvenienced.
It's incredible. Like, it's an absolutely incredible document. It's just an absolute perfect summation of the people running this.
Yeah. Later, when they get back, he says, "I wouldn't call it fraud. I'd call it false advertising." Like, my dude.
Like, what do you think those things are?
So there's the cheese sandwich post, and then they're like, yeah, there's
look,
no...
I mean, look, they got me hungry. It was literally just like a piece of bread, like one piece of bread with a slice of cheese on it, and like some lettuce.
What kind of cheese was that?
It looked like maybe provolone.
Gross. I like provolone cheese, but...
It's one of the blander... I mean, you certainly can't build a sandwich around provolone. It's one of the blander cheeses.
Yeah, it's nice and creamy. I like it. It looked so bad, though. It looked so... Oh, it was like Kraft
provolone.
It looked awful.
It looked like the kind of provolone... It looks like the provolone they put on Jimmy John's sandwiches, which is basically non-existent.
So they officially cancel the festival, and everybody tries to go home, but end up locked in the airport overnight because they don't have the planes. Because they fired Keith!
I don't think Keith was going to personally fly everyone back to where they were going.
What if this movie ended with Keith bursting the doors open in the airport and being like, let's go.
Flying everyone in zero Gs.
Yeah. Let's get back to Miami.
He teaches them all how to fly on Microsoft Flight Simulator, and then they all fly themselves back.
He breaks the doors open and be like, I didn't bring a plane, but I did bring a computer that has Microsoft's Flight Simulator on it.
Come on over and check out my rig. I'll teach you how to fly.
Is there an outlet around here?
Get you off this island.
Lost. Great show. The locals...
We're not going to Guam, are we?
The locals are now expecting $1 million immediately. Andy, the guy who was going to suck somebody's dick for water, ended up trading clothes with a hotel employee and jumped in a car to get away.
Yeah, they basically, everybody involved had to get out of there.
Yep.
One of the locals that worked with them, that people knew worked with them, had to basically leave.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, they were asking him for money, and he was like, there's nothing, I don't know anything about this, I can't help you
at
all.
Understandable that these people were getting very irate, because it was literally like construction crews that hadn't been paid at all for any of the work that they did, and weren't going to get paid. Poor fucking workers that had been trying to work around this horribly organized project with terrible direction, and they spend a bunch of time on it, and then they don't even get paid for it. The restaurant owner doesn't get paid, She goes through pretty much all her savings.
I think she's like $50,000 in savings.
Yeah, I think she also went through a lot of that to pay her staff, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, also,
it's not good, but it's the right
thing. Nice story, yeah, but I wasn't surprised. I was talking to my friend who had also watched this, and he was like, couldn't an appearance fee, couldn't the people that made this documentary, like, you know, they have the money, they could have just given her like that amount of money as an appearance fee.
I was wondering if they did that or what.
I don't think they did, but somebody made a GoFundMe for her and it easily met its funding goal.
Good. That's good.
Which is good. Yeah. It'd be nice if they would also do it for the construction workers, but
yeah. I wonder. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about money. Or filmmaking. Or the Bahamas, except the Fyre Festival was there. And Pablo Escobar lived there, apparently. Did Pablo Escobar have his own plane? Probably, right? That's why I had that runway.
Yeah, Jake, I don't know if the biggest, like, drug traffickers in world history had enough money to afford his own plane. I don't know.
Did you know what Pablo...
He could afford it. He had his own island, but I can't imagine he'd be able to afford a plane.
Do you know what he called the island when he lived there?
Cocaine Island.
He called it El Chapo Trap House.
Oh, good one.
Thank you. I don't listen to that show.
He named it after a different drug lord that didn't exist or wasn't prominent at the time that he was working.
He had a vision.
Yeah, he's a real forward-thinking guy.
Mm-hmm. So they go back to New York and try to spin it, and Billy tries to call the company a family, and one of the people who works there is like, fuck no. I absolutely would not call this a family.
Yeah, well, he also says, like, we've frozen all, like, payments, so it's like, oh, so you're firing us. And he's like, well, you can still work here for free. And they were like, no.
No, not a thing. Oh, yeah. I scrolled down too far, and I just got reminded of something else we're going to talk about soon. Billy has decided he's not firing anyone, but he's also not paying anyone.
Yeah, all their payment... All their paychecks were frozen.
You can't do that, bud. So the guests try to file a class action lawsuit, but then the lawyers figure that they'll have more success suing privately. I don't really know how that all works. You'll have to ask your roommate, because he's a lawyer. The FBI then gets involved. The Bahamians never get paid. Billy is arrested and then let out on bail of...
It was like $250,000 I believe.
While out on bail, he lives in a penthouse, and then the...
Yeah, he claims that he's living with his parents again, but yeah, he doesn't seem like his standard of living has dropped at all.
No. Then some Fyre guests start getting emails promising VIP access to New York events.
Yeah, to, like, the Met Gala, which, as they point out, is an invite-only thing. Like, you can't just go there, and, Condé Nast has to invite you. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, like, it was, like, a meet-and-greet with Taylor Swift after, like, the VMAs or something like that, and, like, Taylor Swift doesn't do meet-and-greets.
Mm-hmm. And yet, 15 people bought Grammys tickets from them for $100,000 each.
Yep, they were able to scam some people into doing this, which is crazy too, because it's the same people that had gotten scammed by them for the festival. This whole thing is crazy because they were also filming this the entire time.
Yeah, I was gonna say that earlier. It's like
I don't understand it. The guy that they got to film it to was like, I have no fucking idea why they asked me to do this. But the creepiest energy of anyone in the movie other than Billy McFarland was that guy that was making the phone calls for him. Mm-hmm. That dude was scary. Like, I do not know what was going on with that guy, but like...
Me neither. I wonder what he's up to. Did they have a update on him at the end?
They might have. I don't know. Did you notice, by the way, you know the one point in... Somebody pointed this out. You know the one point in the footage that they have for that where that one guy is like, don't show me on camera, like I shouldn't be on camera or whatever?
Yes.
Do you know who that ended up being? Somebody looked into this, who? And it ended up being someone notable.
Who was it?
It was Chuck Schumer's press secretary.
Oh, no, yeah, they, no, there was a, his name card had that listed.
Oh, it did? I didn't even see that.
Yeah, because I remember seeing that and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, weird. Okay. So, Billy McFarland was sentenced to 6 years in federal prison, which...
Yeah, he violated his bond and, like, by running scams while he was out on bail.
How do you not learn your lesson?
Because he can't. Because he can't. He's, like, a fucking... He's a serial liar.
Yeah.
Like, he can't... I'm sure he'd convinced himself that he, like... I don't know. I like, that's the thing with that. Like, seeing that shit. Because it was one thing before where it was, like, this dude's just a con artist and maybe he lies to himself and he's, like, a habitual liar. But then when this stuff happened, it was, like, a little more sinister and it was, like, what's going on with him? And that's when they allude to the fact that that, like, credit card thing that he did before was also a scam and that FIRE had completely exaggerated, like, the scope of their app and that that was also a scam. He had completely exaggerated all of their funding and all of their earnings and profits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like,
at one point,
they were making like 5 digits in profit, and he had said it was like millions of dollars.
Yeah, I think at one point they said he had made like $1.5 million with, what was it, Magnesis?
Yeah.
Initially, and he reported it was like $34 million or something like that.
Which, this is the kind of stuff that, like, this is, I have to imagine that kind of shit is absolutely rampant across Silicon Valley, because this got exposed around the same time that the whole Theranos thing did. Are you familiar with that?
I don't think so.
It's the blood testing. This is a thing that that someone should make a documentary about. Someone wrote a book about it that I really want to get. But the entire story is really interesting, where it's this Stanford dropout. Let me look this up really quick. It's Elizabeth Holmes, and it's really fucking bizarre because she's a Stanford dropout. She claimed to have like revolutionized this blood testing technology that would like barely take any and was more accurate.
What purpose?
It was for like commercial blood testing. So I mean, like, for anywhere that you have to do that, for like medical technology.
Okay.
Like, and so the idea, like, she, her company ended up getting investment from like Walgreens and CVS because they were like, if this technology is legit, like, they didn't have any real proof of it, but they were like, if this is legit, we got to get in here right now because it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be make things, it's going to completely change how we do this or whatever. So we want to be the ones that get this proprietary technology. And basically what it was revealed was that she was a complete fucking egomaniac and did not have the technology to do this and had completely terrorized all of her employees and basically made them sign NDAs and stuff like that so that they couldn't come out and say, like, yeah, we don't have this technology, and completely inflated all of her reported earnings. And you could tell that, like, she tried to create this persona where she, like, started dressing like Steve Jobs. Like, she would dress in, like, a, like, all black with, like, a turtleneck.
What?
And... like, she also, the weirdest thing about this is she had, like, the thing that people would always say before the jig was up with this, because she was showing up on, like, the cover of, like, Forbes and all of this other stuff, and it was, like, I think she met with Obama at one point. It was, like, this is, like, the next, like, big Silicon Valley person or whatever, you know? It's, like, this is, like, this genius or whatever. Because she fit that exact narrative of all these people, like, the fucking Zuckerberg narrative basically.
Again?
Elizabeth Holmes. And, but one of the most, like, the most striking things about her was she had this fucking weirdly deep voice, like this, like, booming voice, and apparently that was also a put-on. Like, her normal voice doesn't sound like that. Like, it was a calculated choice on her part. The whole thing's fucking bizarre. And, but basically, eventually it came out that she had completely defrauded everyone involved with it, and she had people like fucking, like, Henry Kissinger was on the board of Theranos and stuff like that. Yeah, it's nuts. And she ended up, I think she's not allowed, I don't know that she got any actual jail time, but she's not allowed to be the CEO, I think, of any company. You know, like, you'll get banned for a certain period of time, like Jacob Wohl is, where his trader's license was revoked. But yeah, it was valued at, like, a fucking ridiculous amount. Yeah, I'm looking this up right now.
I'm reading her Wikipedia article right now. It says the case is now proceeding to the U.S. District Court in San Jose. That she pleaded not guilty. So
yeah, she's still, despite the fact that there's no evidence that, like, any of this was real. Like, they were literally, like, in demonstrations, they were doing, like, a shell game where they, like, had their machine that didn't work and they would test it traditionally and then, like, try and make it out, like, and like, basically people were consistently telling, like, Walgreens and CVS, like, this is not, like, this is bullshit, like, they're conning you, and they were like, look, if this is real, like, we have to have it, so, like, I don't want to hear about this or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's just, feel like this is something that's rampant in Silicon Valley, where it's like, people love this narrative of, like, this, you know, this person that was, like, so gifted that, like, even, like, traditional education, like, wasn't ready for them and their ideas. So they had to go out and disrupt. And, you know, they did it as, like, a 21-year-old who doesn't know fucking anything about blood testing.
Yeah.
And, you know, but they, like, they just, on their own, they're so brilliant that they came up with this way that revolutionized the whole thing. And then there's so much floating capital that people will just throw a ton of venture capital at it. And then also, the net worth of it will be completely inflated until eventually that bubble bursts. And this was like seeing a less competent version of that kind of thing was crazy, because it's like that had even more red flags and was even less legit. And like it, people were still just like, no, it's definitely real. Like,
no, it's,
it's such like a nice, like, sort of encapsulation. It's like a microcosm of Silicon Valley and, like, just the insane credit bubble there.
Yeah, well, at one point somebody said, like, Billy McFarland really wanted to be a part of that world and, like, was just trying to figure out a way to make that his real life, which is, like, really gross to me. Just, like, how important that is. I don't know. It's gross. I don't like him.
Oh, apparently, this is actually kind of intriguing. I don't know if this is actually ever going to get out of production or anything, but apparently Adam McKay is making a movie based off of the story of Theranos.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, I mean, that's someone I trust to actually tell that story, so.
I know, Vice was so good.
I haven't seen Vice.
I also haven't seen Vice. Apparently, it's not very good.
I've heard it's fine. I liked The Big Short.
The Big Short
quite
was
a bit.
Incredible. So this movie, though, the documentary we watched this week, ends with the guy whose name I forgot, who looks like Jonathan Van Ness, saying, "I wouldn't be surprised if in 10 years this all happened again."
It absolutely will. I would not be shocked to see, like, the minute this dude gets out of jail, he just starts doing this again.
Oh, yeah. And then they're going to, like, put him on the Today Show or something and be like, "Well, Billy McFarland learned a lot in prison. Here's his new idea." And it's going to be the same shit.
Yep.
Firefest 2.0, 10 years later. We're doing it right this time.
Well, that, I mean, the analog to that is apparently Elizabeth Holmes is also still trying to do stuff.
Of course.
Like, they're all, like, they can't not do it. Like, they all, and that was the other thing with, like, Elizabeth Holmes was, like, it is just this weird, because I feel like Billy McFarland is that way too. Like, you mentioned the idea that he just wanted to be a part of this world. It's people with, like, this incredibly broad, raw ambition, but with no scruples or really any kind of actual
skill.
Like, it's just someone who wants to be rich or famous, and they don't care how they get there. Because, like, Elizabeth Holmes, people said that, like, apparently, since she was really young, her whole thing was, like, "I want to be a billionaire." And that was it. It wasn't, like, there was no other details. It was, like, "I want to be a billionaire." And so it was, like, it doesn't matter how I get there. It's, like, the idea that a person doesn't have any idea of what they actually want to do. They just have a point they want to get to, and they don't care how they get there.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to what happens with both of these people now.
It's fucking crazy.
I'm super invested in the Elizabeth Holmes story now. I can't believe I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, look up. There is something in, I want to say Current Affairs had, I don't know if it was an excerpt of Bad Blood, that book that was written about it, or something similar, but there was like a long form thing on it in there that was very interesting that I would highly recommend that you read.
Okay. To change topics completely, the next season of The Challenge begins February 6th.
Yeah, I had one of my former coworkers who cuts my hair now, actually, is a big fan of The Challenge. So
oh, nice.
I talked to her about that whenever I get my hair cut, and she tagged me on Facebook in the trailer for it. So I was like, oh cool,
Did you watch the trailer?
I did not watch it.
Okay. Do you know anything about this season?
I do not.
Okay. It is called War of the Worlds.
Holy shit.
So aliens attacked during the filming of this season, and then they just all band together and fight the aliens. It's going to be a very good season. That's a joke, you guys. So one vet is paired with one rookie from outside the usual Challenge universe. And they are paired... I think it's going to be the Americans are paired with non-Americans, because there are some American rookies, but most of the rookies are from outside of America.
Okay.
So, it's called War of the Worlds. Get it? Here's the cast. These are all the rookies. You may have heard of, like, one or two of them. Alan Valdez from Telemundo, Ashley Kane from X on the Beach UK, Chase McNary from The Bachelorette, Dee Nguyen from Geordie Shore, Georgia Harrison from a show called Love Island.
I think I've heard about it. Isn't that like, I think Love Island is a British show.
I think you're right. Gus Smirnios from Floribama Shore. Wow, Paulo Andrade from X on the Beach, Brazil.
Damn, okay.
Josh Martinez, and then Julia and Liz Nolan, all from Big Brother. Maddie Lynn Brew from Party Down South.
From Party Down.
I wish. I remember when Party Down...
Ron Donald from Party Down.
I remember when Party Down South came out, and I was like, oh, is it a... weird spinoff from Party Down, but set in the South? Nope, it's a totally different show. Party Down, good show. Morgan Willett from Big Brother, Natalie Duran from American Ninja Warrior, Shailene Sutherland from The Bachelor Canada, even...
Having someone from American Ninja Warrior is a good thing for the show.
I think a lot of people are expecting a lot from her.
I would be.
I'm excited to see her. Stephen Bear from Geordie Shore, Theo Campbell from Love Island, Tarabi Kamkaran from Survivor Turkey.
Okay.
I don't know anything about Survivor Turkey or that guy, but apparently the Turkish version of Survivor goes on for like 100 days or something like that. So
that's way too long.
Yeah. It's apparently much more intense. Zahida Allen from X on the Beach, and that's all of the rookies. Here are...
Not a single person from Survivor.
Well, there's Kamrikan. Is that his name? Oh, Tarabi Kamkaran.
From American Survivor.
From American Survivor. Hey. The
people that I know.
Jay.
No one I know.
Jay is close. Jay is on X on the Beach now. I know that he and Figgy have been contacted for the challenge over the last couple seasons. So I think within the next year or so, we'll probably see him.
We better.
Here are the people from the challenge returning. There's Ashley, who won last season. Zach, Amanda, Car Maria, Natalie, Polly, Johnny, of course, CT, of course, Devon, Hunter, Kyle, Jenna is back.
Oh, good.
Wes is back.
Good. If you're going to have bananas on a season, Wes has to be on the season.
It's much better. Much better. Wes, Johnny, and CT, like that's like the perfect powerhouse trifecta in challenge history. Wes is back. Nani is back.
Damn, okay.
Cam is coming back, of course. She's a new one. So she's always going to be coming back. And
that's good.
Rounding out the challenge participants is Leroy.
Yay!
So that starts in 2 weeks, or a week and a half, I guess. Do you want to watch the premiere and do an episode on
it? Yeah! Yeah, I think we should at least... I want to see... You know, I don't necessarily... I think that's perfect to not commit to the whole season, but just see how it goes. We can see if we want to cover it all the way.
TJ has been saying it's a really intense season and one of their best yet, and has said it's much better than any of the recent seasons. And when TJ gets excited about a season, I am also excited about a season. It is the opposite of Jeff Probst. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But next week, we could either watch whatever movie we were talking about for a long time earlier. What movie was that? That was like an hour ago.
Yeah, who even knows?
Well, we'll listen back to it. We can listen to that. Watch that.
We were talking about Joey. I think that's the thing we're talking about.
We were talking about Joey a lot, but I think that was before the episode actually started. And I want to save the entire season for an off season so we can get through it all. Or we could simulate another season. Or we could watch a movie.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. What movie would we even watch?
Well, I think it would be fun to watch Death Race 2000. That's a great movie. Or Gymkata.
Or... I feel like we've done that for this show.
Maybe we have. I remember we did an episode of an old podcast we did way back when. That we did
that
like three episodes of on Gymkata. Yeah, I'm down to simulate another season if you are. We could place people in another theme that they weren't initially part of.
Yeah, I like that. I like that idea.
Let's see which ones we haven't done. We did Heroes versus Villains. We did The Collars.
We've done Brains Beauty Brawl. Oh, Royal Rumble's tonight, by the way.
I know,
exciting.
I'm really excited. One World is bad. Redemption Island is bad. We can only do through Ko Rong. I'm trying to find what's a good theme. I mean, we could go way back and do like a men versus women season or an old versus young season. Because they only recently started doing themes like this, and I feel like we've played through a lot of them.
We could do that. We could do our own version of Second Chance.
We could do that, or we could do a rival season. Although that's kind of blood versus water again, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Or what if we did a fans versus favorites, and we each get to pick one tribe?
Who would the fans be, though?
Whichever. It doesn't matter. We'll just use that as the template, and we can come up with a different title.
Oh, okay.
You want to do that?
I don't know. We can figure it out.
Okay. Yeah. We've played through all the, like, major themed episodes, or seasons, I should say. I think it would be fun to coach a team each.
I like that idea a lot, actually.
Yeah, let's do that.
We each pick a tribe.
Yeah, tribe. I keep saying team. I'm like my mom. My mom always says team when she means tribe. And then when they do the team rewards post merge, she calls those teams tribes. I'm like, Mom,
come on.
The tribe is the buff. The team is the. Whatever. I know what she means. Okay, so next week...
That's a classic mom thing, along with, like, getting song lyrics wrong.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, talking about Pokemans.
Classic stuff.
Classic. Okay, so... Let's get Heroes vs. Villains official. HVV2 is the new hashtag. You can follow, tweet at Jeff Probst with that one.
I think he said HPV2, and I was like, no, no, the first one was bad enough. It's become more powerful.
HPV was the, it's not a disease.
Gives you double cancer.
It gives you double cancer, the worst kind of
cancer. Yeah,
it's
a human papillomavirus. It's the thing that can give you, like, cervical cancer, I think?
HPV was the virus, the end all viruses, and then came HPV2.
Sequel no one asked for.
I was thinking, like, the World Wars, but, yeah.
I mean, World War II was the sequel no one asked
That's
for.
That's true. Okay, Heroes vs. Villains 2, HVV2, is a hashtag. Let's get it happening. Edge of Extinction starts in a few weeks, so that's going to be exciting. And you can follow us on Twitter, DYWSLN. You can follow me on Twitter, Jake Scheidel is my name.
Follow me at TomNotTom on the Twitter.
Mm-hmm. You can review us on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars. Please. This is a really good episode, and we barely even talked about Joey, and we are nearly an hour and a half in.
This is the good stuff, people.
This is the good stuff.
Nothing but.
It's like that book about astronauts. The right stuff.
The good stuff. What the fuck is this book?
The good stuff. It's season 5 of The Good Place when they go into space.
Wouldn't they call it the good space?
You want to end the episode now? Yeah, I
know. Yes, please.
Right, have a great summer.
More than anything in the world.
It's all good. Should have a great summer already.
Deuces.
Sorry. Girl, your stare, those eyes, I love it when you look at me, baby. Your lips, your smile, I love it when you kiss me, baby. Your hips, those thighs, I love it when you fuck me, baby. And I can't deny, I love it when I'm with you, baby.
But anyway, yeah, out of all those people, I was like, yeah, Matt LeBlanc, cool.
Love that.
But anyway, so I saw the one of the advertisements for Joey. I was like, oh, that show looks pretty funny, because there's a joke in it where he's, you know, he's doing the thing where Joey's, you know, he's an actor. He's trying to make it in acting.
Yeah.
It's this whole thing.
Yeah.
The premise of the show, I believe, is he moves to Hollywood, right?
Like, he moves to Hollywood because he was a soap opera star on Friends, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Or maybe
or like he was like a day player. I don't think he's a star. I think he was like, I think the joke was that he was like a bit player on a soap opera and then would also show up as like a dead body on Law and Order or something like that. But I don't think he was a particularly successful actor even by that standard. But anyway, there's doing like a, you know, like an Access Hollywood type show.
Okay.
And he's reading off the teleprompter, and he goes, Welcome to Hollywood Minute. I'm Name. And I was like, yeah, like, it's, you know, I mean, at the...
That's a good
joke. Yeah, at the time, I was like, whoa, what a great joke, not realizing, like, it's kind of like a... I mean, other people have made this joke, but it was the first time I'd seen it, and I was like, wow, this must be really funny.
It's so funny.
But, you know, that it's funny when you see stuff when you're younger like that, you don't realize when stuff has been kind of cannibalized from other stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I remember, I think I watched, like, one episode of that show, and the plot of it was that Joey goes in to audition for, like, an OC-style show, and he thinks he's auditioning to play one of the kids, and he's actually auditioning to play the dad. And that's, like,
that's very
yeah.
Good.
That's another one where it's, like, that's kind of, like, a pretty rote premise, but at the time I was like, ho-ho, good one, Joey, and then I never watched
that's
another episode
funny.
Of it.
I think we should, next off-season, just watch all of Joey, because I don't think it lasted more than one
yeah,
season.
I don't think it really had much staying power. You know what? I hate Friends, so...
So Joey's gonna
be
great.
Honestly, might be better. Here's what I will say about my hatred of Friends.
Mm-hmm.
Joey was not my least favorite part of that show, so there is a good chance that Joey I will enjoy more than
I
Friends.
Think I said in the beginning of this story, Joey is the funniest part of Friends. Do you want to get started recording? this.
I've been recording.
I mean, doing the actual episode. You knew what I meant.
Yeah, we could do that too.
Oh,
I like that it took me a good like couple minutes to get to the point where I could just explain a very sort of safe, easy to explain joke on the show, Joey. I had to be like, here's all of the context. This is everything I was experiencing at the time.
I do the same thing.
I had just won the geography B in sixth grade, and I was riding high. Thought I'd treat myself to a little bit of situational comedy.
I just did the same thing.
That also little bit of, I'm not making that up. I just want everyone to recognize that I did.
No, I knew that you weren't making that up. I remember that being a thing.
No, I knew you weren't. I just want the listener. I want the listeners to know that that was a little bit of real, you know, coloring it with a little bit of details from my life, you know, for authenticity. We here to stay. Right now, let's get into this motherfucker. You understand? We're not going to Guam, are we?